Africa Climate Conversations, the podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Africa Climate Conversations podcast. As I promised you, today we are on the Kenyan coast, specifically Pate Island in Lamu County, the largest island in the Lamu Archipelago, lying between the towns of Lamu and Kiunga. Communities here depend on fishing. However, fishery productivity depends on healthy coral reef system. The corals in the Lamu Kiunga area have degraded over the years. How did it impact these communities' livelihoods? What degraded these corals? What are these communities doing about it? Come with me. Let's explore together. I'm your host, Sophie Mbogwa. Amina Ahmed, a 40-year-old mother of five from Shanga Ishakani on Pate Island, learned fishing from her mother. Amina told the Africa Climate Conversations that growing up, fish octopus were plentiful along the pristine Pate Island shores. In fact, the family did not need a boat or sophisticated fishing gear to go fishing. During low tides, one would walk to catch fish, which was plentiful in shallow waters, to catch and carry the fish home. One simply needed a stick and a basket. Then, most families fished for sustenance, as there was no market.
The cold storage was also a problem.
The only way the fishers could preserve the fish was by salting and sun drying. As time passed, Amina explained that the use of destructive fishing gear, like seine nets, began to increase as people started fishing for the market. The 1998 El Nino and infrastructure development also happened. Over the years, much of the once productive coral reef system along the Pate Kiunga turned into rubble and fisheries started disappearing.
Illegal fishing had really degraded this area very much. It's illegal fishing where juveniles are fished and also corals destroyed. When corals are destroyed, their housing and food are lost and hence the fish diminish. In this case, we can only catch the fish and the octopus deeper in the sea. If a fisher can't get his daily catch, life gets really hard for us back home as there is no money and hence no food for our children. It got so bad to the extent that the fishermen were too many, but there was no fish caught. It was women who really suffered the most. Imagine you have children, they want to go to school, but there is no money. At the same time, they want food, but there is no food. The husband comes back from the sea with no or too little catch. Sometimes all he has can serve as one day food. We eat, and life just goes on. We didn't have decent houses, and for clothes, I mean, we couldn't even afford to buy our children clothes. And of course, as the years go by, another child is born. Life gets difficult, as you're probably having constant fights with your husband. And on the other side, you're having trouble with a child who wants to go to school, but you just can't afford it.
In 2021, Kenya launched the Lamu Port, a mega infrastructure project that is part of a $23 billion Lamu Port South Sudan-Ethiopia Transport Corridor, or LAPSET, an ambitious transport corridor between Lamu, a small archipelago north of Mombasa in Kenya, South Sudan, and Ethiopia. The port was built by the China Communications Construction Company. To provide ships with easy access to the port, the Lamu Port at Mada Bay, a cornerstone of the Kenyan Vision 2030 development plan, requires a deep and sheltered bay and a wide channel. When complete, the port will have 32 400-meter long berths along a 6-kilometer coastline. According to the LAPSET Development Authority, the construction of the 1.2-kilometer first three berths is already complete, with berth 1 currently operating and offering cargo transshipment. To create these berths and a container terminal, the seabed had to be dredged up to 18 meters. Amina says the seabed dredging has brought about sedimentation and impacted fisheries.
When LAPSET started, it also started degrading the corals. The fish also started disappearing as well as the octopus because of the pollution that came with the development. There was too much sedimentation, and the tidal waves also brought too much sedimentation to the octopus shelters.
Jelvis Mwaura, a marine research officer at the Kenya Marine and Fisheries Research Institute, KEMFRI, told the Africa Climate Conversations that although the environmental impact assessment was done, the mitigation measures to prevent the impacts from being realized was not done right.
When there is that idea of bringing such large-scale development, there has to be that approach of doing the things right. And that's how we go wrong. The environmental impact was done, the recommendations were made, but during the implementation, things to my understanding, they did not follow kind of mitigations that they were supposed to have done. Because during the dredging of the ocean, they were supposed to have done it during low wind condition, as there is no a lot of winds pushing a lot of water, and that's spreading the sediments too far to maybe even coral reef areas. It should have been done in a very dry, calm conditions. There could have been a very little impact in terms of sediment flow impacting those corals. So conservation, yes, of coral reefs, development of such kind of large-scale development activity, they're all one thing. But the problem is doing it at the right way is a big issue we have.
Coral reefs are home to millions of species which feed and breed here. Hidden beneath the ocean waters, fish, octopus, seahorses, sea turtles are among thousands of creatures that rely on reefs for their survival. Corals provide crevices, branching overhangs, and ledges for fish to hide from predators, while algae provide habitat and food. Certain animals will attach their eggs to the corals. Maura says more than 3,000 people in 600 households along the Patakiunga area directly or indirectly depend on coral reefs through artisanal fisheries and tourism. Contrary to popular belief, corals are located closer to the seashores, making them more susceptible to negative human impacts such as pollution and sustainable fishing methods such as the dynamites and seinets that catches juveniles and climate change.
Corals are very vulnerable, or rather they are easily to be disturbed or to be damaged, simply because their location is very close to the land where there's a lot of human activities. You'll find hoteliers, they're just building their hotels very close to the seashore. You'll even find municipal council having their sewage outlets just directly to the ocean, not knowing the coral reefs are just about 1 kilometer or where the sewage the dumping site is. Because somehow they assume the ocean is too big to dilute pollution materials they are putting into the ocean. That sewage water, it has a lot of nutrients. Call it nitrates, call it phosphates. Now, when they get into the water, yeah, you can say it, there is that dilution effect. But if the dumping of that sewage is continuous throughout the year, day and night, you will agree with me, at one point in time, it will reach where the corals cannot survive because they are getting a lot of unwanted nutrients. Actually, if there is a lot of nitrates, there is a proliferation of algae which competes with corals. So if you are promoting algae, then of course you are killing corals because they cannot outcompete. And that's why you find most reefs that are very close to municipal disposal areas, you will find that area is either a rocky reef because it used to have corals but they died because of that kind of issue. Whereas if you go away to other areas that do not have this dumping, you will find the nearshore corals are very healthy. Whereas issue of sediment. Sediment happens actually when there's a lot of rainfall, flooding, and it carries a lot of sediments from upcountry. So a lot of sediments will come surround the corals. Within no time, there is that smoothing effect, as in sediments come and cover the corals. Of course, if you are covered by sand or sediments, what happens? You don't breathe, you don't eat. In 1 week's time, you're dead.
Since the 1998 global coral reef mass bleaching, Maura says only coral reefs located in marine protected areas like the Kisite Mpunguti Marine Park and Reserve, Malindi Marine National Reserve, the Mombasa Marine National Park and Reserve have been able to recover as they are less influenced by human activities such as pollution and sedimentation. But back to Pate Island. With the destruction, communities that were dependent on fishing struggled to make a living. Hassan Mohamed Sani, a deputy warden at the Pate Marine Community Conservancy, PMCC, and a community coral restoration expert, told the Africa Climate Conversations that in the interest of understanding what was affecting their livelihood, the community via the PMCC, the Northern Rangeland Trust, NRT Coast, Kemfri, and the Nature Conservancy, TNC, came together in 2012. At first, they conducted fish catch surveys.
However, the fish catch data surveys alone could not provide a clear answer. Sunny says over the years, other surveys trying to understand the health of the seabed would be incorporated.
Before we started the LMMA, we only conducted a fish catch data survey as most of the community members depend on fishing. We constantly recorded a decline in fish levels over the years of collecting the fish catch data. So we had to request a sit-down with the donors to understand why there was such a constant decline. They brought scientists and researchers who advised us to extend the fish catch data to benthic and coral surveys. The three research data revealed that corals had died, which was the major reason for the fish decline. The researcher explained that bleaching was one of the main reasons the coral reef declined due to climate change and other human influences, such as port development. The scientists advised that the only thing we could do was restore those corals.
It's 2019 and the scientists have advised on coral reef restoration. Three villages, Pate, Shangai Shekani and Shangarubu, bringing together three beach management units would come together to form a locally managed marine area or LMMA. Why are the LMMA areas important? Here is Joshua Oginde, the NRT Coast Marine Enterprises and Monitoring Officer.
People think that the ocean is vast and you cannot exhaust the resources, but then that is where we go wrong sometimes. Problem is that the area that we can really utilize is very small. For the communities in Lamu, for example, they do not have the capacity to go offshore, like very deep in the ocean, to exploit the resources that are there. So you find that most of the fishing is done inshore within the lagoons close to the communities. And so Lamu being an archipelago means it has small islands close together. So between the islands is where you find shallow waters that the fishers now depend on. This is where these locally managed marine areas are, because sometimes you're not able to access the open sea during rough seasons. But then these areas that are fishing grounds for local fishers are pretty much accessible throughout the year.
The community via PMCC, together with KEMFRI, NRT Coast, TMC, Kenya Wildlife Services, Kenya Forest Services, and the Lamu County Fisheries Department, launched the Artificial Coral Reef Restoration Project. The goal was to restore at least 0.5 hectares of coral reef areas called a fish refreshment zone within the LMMA, enhance fisheries, and safeguard marine habitats. Sunny says the restoration project began with sensitizing communities about the importance of coral reefs to their livelihoods, as well as how the communities were influencing the coral reefs system and other natural impacts such as climate change. Furthermore, the communities received training on coral restoration. Later in 2021, they built artificial blocks that mimicked the natural coral environment and started transplanting corals onto them.
We used blocks made of cement. On these blocks, we planted coral fragments that were 1 or 2 inches long. We also made a tree nursery where we constructed a pipe resembling a tree and planted coral fragments as they hung. We also planted a table nursery. This is where we used wire mesh, built a structure resembling a table, and planted these coral fragments on top of it. We also directly transplanted smaller coral fragments into already grown corals, as we wanted to have a diverse range of species. In all four methods, we noted that the wire mesh rusted and collapsed due to the salty water. The corals had been adapting well, but the method failed. However, the other methods are still working to date.
The coral fragments are attached to the artificial blocks using either zip ties or marine cement. Over time, can the plastic zip ties used in nurseries and the cement used to construct artificial reef structures harm the marine ecosystem? Here is Oginde.
We've done our research with the help of our research partners, and we've established that the materials that we're using are not really harmful to the marine life, because concrete is just concrete. If you have a piece of concrete in the water, then it stays there for a very long time without being eroded. It doesn't change the chemical quality of the water. Even if it does, then it's on a very, very small scale, which is negligible. PVC, we know it's plastic, but then it's not permanent. So these are nurseries, and nurseries are not permanent establishments. Once we've transferred everything to the restoration site and the artificial reef structures, we will not need the nurseries. The main essence of the nurseries at the moment is that we don't have to go to the donor site. every time, because now if you keep going back to the same site to get fragments, that means you leave it degraded. We don't want to leave it degraded. We just need to go there one time, get the healthy corals, bring them to the nursery, grow them, and when we're stocking them on the artificial reef structures, we take a piece of it and we still leave a small piece hanging on the lines. 6 months to 1 year, then it grows again, because they grow very, very slowly. But then we use species that are fast growing. So we use branching corals to achieve our main objectives, which is coral cover. We prefer to use fast growing corals. Once the restoration project has come to the end of its, then we'll take them out of the water. Some projects are 5 years long, some are 3 years long.
But with a project time frame of few years and transplanting coral fragments, which are very slow to grow, and the project aimed at achieving coral cover within the short period, how does the project ensure it doesn't compromise on other coral species that might be hard to grow but existed in this ecosystem before? Here is Oginder again.
We don't disregard the other species. I mean, we have to at least also consider biodiversity. But that means we have all the existing species. But then the nursery, because again, the nursery type that we're using, the design, accommodates branching corals better. Because the others, mostly we just do direct planting. We just take them from the donor site and then we put them on the artificial reef structures without putting them on the nursery. Because most of the non-branching species are more resilient to changes. So the reason we put these corals at the nursery is for them to adapt. Because sometimes if you just bring them from the mother colony and just put them somewhere else without trying to take care of them, then most of the time they bleach due to too much pressure, changes and stress.
Not all replanted fragments would survive when transplanted from nurseries to blocks. Fish such as the parrotfish, which feeds on the corals, would consume some of them. Therefore, communities conduct regular monitoring and maintenance weekly for the first 6 months, but reduce it to once every 2 weeks once the fragments successfully attach to the artificial blocks. After a year, it scales down to quarterly. During monitoring, they clean the blocks and corals of the algae. This decreases the competition for the coral fragments, enabling them to grow. They also monitor and record their growth. What's the current status?
We started planting coral fragments that were almost 1 or 2 centimeters, but today you will find coral fragments that have grown to more than 20 centimeters or more than 15 centimeters. Before, when the coral garden was in rubble, fish were scarce and small. But by restricting fishing and replanting the corals over the years in the garden, you will find large fish weighing about 7 to 10 kilograms, and a lot of them. You can even hide among them and no one will notice you, as the fish are plentiful.
To protect the coral fragments and increase the chance of survival and fish repopulation, the community restricted fishing in the 0.5 hectare coral garden. The idea is to use the area left unfished, since fish are transboundary animals. Once they overpopulate, they would migrate outside the protected area and the fishermen would catch the fish. Sunny and three other community rangers from the three villages are employed to guard and enforce the LMMA laws the communities have put in place.
We have separately segregated an octopus and a fish breeding garden. Fishing is strictly always prohibited within the fish breeding area. We have set it so because once they breed here, they leave the juveniles there, and as they move to the other areas, the fisherman is allowed to fish. As for the octopus, we restrict fishing within the garden for up to 3 to 4 months. Then we allow fishing for a week or 5 days, during which the community fishes the octopus. This is because octopuses are domicile and in one place for a long time, but also have a short span of life as they die after breeding. After 4 months, the female fishermen catch the octopus before they die. Also, we do not allow an octopus under 0.5 kilogram to be caught, as she is still a juvenile. But for the fish, there is strictly no fishing allowed, as this place is calm and an ideal breeding place for fish. Permitting fishing will destroy the fish eggs due to the CN nets used by fishermen, so we advise they allow the fish to breed. But since fish will always move within the sea, as the bigger fish move, they can catch them elsewhere.
What are some of the challenges the community reef rangers face?
Ideally, no fishing should take place at the coral restriction area, as the coral fragments are fragile and small, making it easy to break as the fishermen pull their nets. The challenge is, yes, we have sensitized the communities, but even as we create awareness, some people will still try to break the rules and fish, as the fish are plentiful there. So we must constantly remain vigilant. Climate change is another challenge. The recent El Niño rains brought in a lot of pollution as all the waters ended at the sea, so even after cleaning, the corals remained polluted the following day. The Lamu Port is another challenge. Our lagoon is not far from the dredge channel. The sediments from the dredge area made their way to the coral garden. Remember, corals do not thrive in polluted areas. Therefore, the sedimentation resulted in stunted coral growth and led to some breaches. Remember also that if the sediments pile over a coral fragment, they choke them. If they can't breathe, then they die or weaken. Also, too much sedimentation causes cloudy waters, reducing the amount of light reaching the corals. If they do not get enough light, the coral can bleach and die.
In July last year, the success of Pate, Shanga Ishekani and Shanga Rubu inspired the Kiunga Community Wildlife Association, Kikoa, located about 30 kilometers northeast of Pate Island, to restore at least 0.5 hectares of coral garden in an area set aside by their village elders for snorkeling activities. Kikoa traditionally sits within the Kiunga Marine National Reserve. Kiunga is located in the Bajun Archipelago, at the northmost point of Kenya's coast on the border with Somalia. Kenya Wildlife Services, KWS, and the local communities have been co-managing it since it gained protection status in 1979. Kiunga is an important nesting area for green and hooksbill turtles. The area is also home for migratory birds, dugongs, and whales. However, the coral reefs in this area have a lower species diversity than those found on the Kenyan south coast along the Vanga-Malindi area. Maura explains that an annual upwelling event bringing in cold nutrient rich water from deep seas majorly impacts coral diversity.
We call it southern east coastal current flowing from all the way from Mozambique, Tanzania, and then goes to Kenya. And then there's another major current that flows from Somalia. So they normally meet around, July. So when they meet these two currents, they converge. When they converge, the currents now drift towards offshore. So what happens to this vacuum that is left? That water deep inside there comes and occupies this vacuum that has been created. And that water is very cold because it's coming all the way 300,000 meters down there. So when it comes up, that's what we call upwelling. Cold, rich water is now coming to the surface. And then when it comes to the surface, now it starts spreading to these coral reef areas. So that kind of scenario happening on a yearly basis, of course, diminishes the productivity of the corals.
He says corals require a clean, shallow environment with warm waters around 26 degrees to grow.
Clean means no nutrients, or if there is a nutrient, then there is a level that coral reefs normally survive. But if it's excess, if there's a lot of nitrates, it's not able to survive because other things will come up. Shallow in the sense that corals, they do photosynthesis. They have an algae inside them. That algae normally helps coral photosynthesize food. So that means this coral, for it to survive, it has to be in shallow environment. Maximum, it can go up to 10 meters or 12 meters. If you find corals beyond 25 meters, those are called deep corals. They don't necessarily do photosynthesis. But the ones that are found on the shallow areas, those are the ones now have algae that depends on light for photosynthesis.
Beyond the natural phenomena impacting the coral reef structures in the Kiunga Pate area, the Kiunga LMMA is located a few minutes from Mlangowa Channel, an open sea opening as you head to Somalia. The ocean current at times gets very high, breaking fragile corals, especially during the rainy season. Senior Sergeant Saidi Mwangira, Kenya Wildlife Services Kiunga Marine National Reserve, told the Africa Climate Conversations that fishermen from neighboring islands such as Faza and Kizingitini, mainly fishing using illegal seine nets, sometimes find their way into the national reserve.
Illegal fishermen using seine nets from areas away from the national reserve, such as Faza and Kizingitini Island, are our main challenge. Fishermen from these islands mainly fish with illegal nets. We have arrested a few, but we haven't prosecuted any. Since we work closely with the community, we confiscate the nets and use that as an opportunity to educate them on the required fishing methods. We also make sure that anyone caught sets an example for the other community members who thought of doing the same.
With the Kiunga Marine National Reserve, located next to Boni and Dondori National Reserves, the community rangers and KWS are tasked not only with protecting the LMMA, but also the national reserves. Senior Sergeant Mwangere says, with only four community rangers in the KWS team, they are hampered by a lack of powerful energy boats and manpower required, especially in patrolling the rough open sea.
In terms of new hires, we need more manpower. We also need better equipment, such as stronger engines for the boats. To be honest, what we have right now is old and untrustworthy, especially during high tides. It is a risk to use it in the open sea, since it's a machine that can stall at any minute. So, where possible, we badly need a better, new, strong engine. We can replace the boat with what we already have.
However, 3 months ago, the challenges notwithstanding, KICOA replicated the PMCC coral rehabilitation effort with the help and training of community coral restoration experts such as Sunny, NRT Coast, TNC, and Kemfri. Sunny had been inspired to train other locals after receiving training earlier from the Wasini Beach Management Unit, a 600-member group that had pioneered rehabilitating corals and seagrass along Kenya's Shimoni Vanga seascape bordering Tanzania. To manage their conservation effort, NRT Coast has trained both the PMCC and KICOA on leadership, financial management, effective governance, and sustainable use of marine resources. Community rangers have been trained in partnership with KWS on the proper management and protection of wildlife in marine resources, while reef rangers have been trained in scuba diving.
We have reef rangers that have been trained on scuba diving as well. So in Kiunga and Pate, we've trained 8 on open water diving. And these are the people that we expect will carry the restoration work forward.
Before the training, the community would free dive to transplant, monitor, and maintain the corals. Adam Malau, a 28-year-old youth conservation champion and reef ranger from Mkokone Village, told the Africa Climate Conversation that free diving was a big challenge.
When you go free diving with just the snorkel glass and fins, cutting the coral fragments takes a lot of time. Sometimes you just finish cutting a fragment, but you need to come up and breathe. You might end up spending 5 hours on an hour-long assignment due to the need to go up and down several times. Corals are live plants. Sometimes, when you take too long, you risk killing them. Sometimes, you transplant them at the nursery, only to come back a few months later and find they all died. However, using the diving cylinder and diving gear has made work easier, faster and more effective, especially getting them from the nurseries and attaching them to the blocks.
Mkokone communities have always relied on tourist revenues. KICOA board members Mohamed Akmani told the Africa Climate Conversations that tourism revenues from turtle conservation have seen children receive at least 20,000 Kenya shillings each in bursaries to help with their school fees. Akmani says the success they have had with turtle conservation have encouraged them to conserve the coral reefs in the hope that more turtles will visit the area, resulting in an increase in tourism levies as well as fish production for their market.
As a community, we rely primarily on tourism revenues. Years ago, the elders had segregated this area so that tourists would come for snorkeling. Tourists also came to feed the turtles as the area has a large population. We have plans for the coral restoration project. The community will receive a percentage of the tourism revenue. We will use the revenues to improve community livelihoods and provide more money for bursaries to ensure that the children can continue acquiring an education. The hope is that the coral restoration project will help raise revenues, as with an increased fish population, the fish catch should rise. Also, as we restore the ecosystem, the hope is that more turtles will visit, resulting in more tourists visiting and hence better revenues.
For the PMCC, they are already charging a conservation fee of 2,000 shillings per local adult visitor and 5,000 shillings for foreigners. The three villages share the revenues collected annually. For the Shangarubo village, their revenues go into paying madrasas teachers. However, the PMCC is planning with NRT to mobilize resources to acquire a glass bottom boat for tourism activities on the LMMA in order to fully benefit from the restoration effort. But I asked Oginda, what are the long-term fruits of reef restoration that the communities should see?
First of all, for you to see the fruits of reef restoration, you need about 10 years to see the big impact, the difference. But then it is very good to see that already we see changes in Pate, because the project has been running for a couple of years now and it's booming, it's teeming with life. Those are benefits, conservation benefits. They do not always convert to money. The money is important, but then think of environment benefits. Think of a healthy ecosystem, what it gives you. Sometimes we overlook that and we don't see ecosystem services as benefits. But then when you have a healthy ecosystem, a healthy environment, then that's the primary thing. Then the money, I wouldn't say it's secondary, but it comes later. And remember, as an organization, we don't just focus on the environment. We also focus on livelihoods. For example, we're keen on getting a market for the fish that comes from within the communities. We've also improved the cold storage facilities, where we've tried to reduce post-harvest losses, because you cannot conserve the environment on an empty stomach.
Maura says, yes, the restoration effort is on a small scale, but he says its long-term ripple effects makes it a move in the right direction.
When you restore a small area, you bring corals back to that particular small area. What you will realize is after 1 year, the spillover, or rather the ripples that will happen, is it will not only be felt at in that small area. The fish, the corals, will move out. If the corals mature, they get to their maturity level. What will they do? They'll do what we call mass spawning. Those eggs that the coral spawn, those fish that have been there when they breed, those small, small eggs, it's not that they're going to remain at that particular area that we have restored. They will be carried by the current. So the idea is like we are rehabilitating a small area, but the impact is spinning over to other nearby areas. To me, I think it's making a significant contribution. A small step, but we are moving in the right direction, as opposed to just allowing the community to continue suffering, the reefs continue to degrade.
Amina R. Abushir, a 27-year-old coral conservation champion at Kikor, is optimistic that preserving the coral gardens will yield advantages not only for herself, but also for future generations. But she cautions, it is important for the local people to first understand the importance of conservation.
Locals must understand the need to conserve nature and why it is important to conserve the coral reef system. Most people in our community lack education, so it takes time, especially to understand the need for this project. Previously, many complained that we restricted fishing on their fishing grounds. In fact, we are not preventing fishing activities, we are just restricting fishing in the coral garden so that in the future we will have all an abundance of fisheries. Unrestricted fishing will result in the overfishing of juveniles, but those that are allowed to mature before being caught can sustain the fishery. Therefore, as we preserve the ecosystem, more fish are available, which benefits us as the Mpokoni community.
Thank you so much. That was all I had for you today. Please join me next as we head south to Kwale County in the town of Munje to meet a group of women conserving the mangrove ecosystem. Remember, you can access the Africa Climate Conversations podcast on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and every other podcast channel you access your other podcast from. Also, please remember to subscribe to the Africa Climate Conversations YouTube channel. We have great video content there, including this one on the Pate Kiunga community coming up this weekend. Also, talk to me using info@africaclimateconversations.com. Until next time, kwaheri. My name is Sophie Mbogwa.
Africa Climate Conversations.